What is up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of Drive for Show DFS for Doe here on Roto Grinders. Happy to be with you talking golf. And we've got a special guest on the show tonight, so plenty of good stuff to get through. And of course, it's Masters Week as well. So I am Justin Van Zuden, aka STL Cardinals 84. I've got my usual co-host, Derek Farnsworth, alongside. I'll introduce him in a minute, but want to introduce our special guest as well this week. We've got Ryan Noonan alongside, rocking the sporty little green Bet Spurts hoodie there. I like that. So Ryan, we were talking just before the show. Ryan's been around the daily fantasy game for quite a long time. We both go back quite a few years. So I was trying to remember where I knew Ryan from, and I think it goes all the way back to the old DraftKings playbook snippets there about that's probably been 7 or 8 years ago now. But Ryan, welcome to the show for the first time, and why don't you go ahead and introduce yourself to the crowd.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I mean, it's we're lucky that we're still doing it, to be honest, and that we're still even here is I think a testament to all of us. So yeah, excited, big fan of obviously both of you guys, you know, rock stars in the community, which is why you guys are like pushing a decade here on the same platform too, which is, I think, pretty badass and speaks to how you guys know your stuff. Yeah, excited to just talk. Not alone. Hot take, guys. This is like just the best tournament and a great betting event and a great DFS event just because of limited field and a place that we know and call home. So, yeah, cannot wait to unpack it.
Yeah, daily fantasy contests are certainly still pretty large. DraftKings has three separate prize pools that are $2.5 million or higher this week, three millionaire makers at three different price points. So pretty remarkable how much the daily fantasy golf game has grown and stayed pretty stable here over the last few years, even with the rise of sports betting. So happy to have you on. And of course, Noto, Derek, happy to have you as usual. What's going on in your world?
Yeah, 3 million makers. That means there's enough, one for each. If that's okay with you guys, that's cool with me. Yeah, I just got back from a golf trip myself. That's why I'm a little sunburnt in the face, but didn't catch much of the Valero Texas Open, but pumped for this week, pumped for the Masters, pumped to have Ryan on. I think I've done a couple shows over on your platform too. Yep. So yeah, happy to have you on and look forward to your thoughts this week.
I believe they said last week that, of course, we won't spend a ton of time looking back at last week because we got a major here, but it was pretty remarkable with the two-way tie there at the top. So Akshay Batia had a six-shot lead going to the final nine holes. He shot two under on those final nine holes and was forced to a playoff because Denny McCarthy went nuclear, birdied eight of the nine holes on the back. And I believe I saw Sunday night that either one of their performances, when you compared strokes gained to the field, would have been enough to win like 169 consecutive PGA Tour events. But of course, it happened in the same week. And so it was McCarthy that ended up the bridesmaid there at the end of the week. But pretty remarkable. Those two lapped the field, beat Rory McIlroy, who finished in third by nine strokes. You know, pretty good Masters tune-up for some of these guys. Even some of them that were already in the field, Russell Henley with a top five finish as well. But pretty remarkable how much those two golfers kind of dominated the field. So we want to get right to the Masters here. But Ryan, is there anything else you want to comment on last week's golf tournament before we move forward here?
It's a rough sweat for someone holding a Akshay ticket that thought the money was spent. You know, like I'm like just allocating bets for the Masters and thinking about what I'm going to get down on and. Yeah, to play well, he would have had to have dealt with like some choking conversations, but like that wasn't even the scenario as you laid out.
Yeah, it was not a choke. Well,
the dude just got run down, and then to it's one of those things when you're watching it, you yell and you know it's not going to happen. Like just one chunky into the water, and then of course, you know, 70 yard chip, and then he hits it about 50 yards into the water and felt pretty good about it. So yeah, great tournament and good drama, and hopefully that carries on this week.
Yeah, certainly wasn't probably worth it for the blood pressure there with the way the back nine went down. But I know saw quite a few people on social media with Akshay tickets last week. So kudos if you were somebody that that ended up winning some money on that. Noto, anything else for you last week?
No, I didn't catch much of it. I was golfing and nursing some hangovers on Sunday. So, yeah, it looked like it was a great event. Akshay, you know, dislocating his shoulder. I saw that flying around Twitter. That's something I would do. Me and him have the same build. So, yeah, I got to be careful when I'm celebrating.
Well, hopefully nobody tears out lower leg part celebrating an ace at the par three contest like Tony Finau did a few years back. And gets injured. Nobody else gets injured right before the Masters. But all right, we'll go ahead and dig in. No time to waste here. We got a three-man booth tonight. Lots to get through. And we'll let Ryan at some point during the show, too. They've done great work over at BetSports Golf. Of course, plenty of great tools over there. We've shown them off on the show here some of the last few weeks. So we'll let Ryan show off some of those tools here during the show as well. But let's go ahead and start digging in. Obviously, a smaller field with the Masters. We've got, I believe, 89 golfers for the second consecutive year. Top 50 in ties will be the cut line. And of course, we do have some, you know, older golfers, past champions, though not as many as usual this year, taking up some of the spots. But usually this is a tournament where the cream will rise to the top, if you will. And you are probably going to have a healthy amount of 6-6 lineups if you are multi-entering tournaments in order to have a shot at some big money. So Noto, obviously an iconic course here. What do we need to know about it?
Yeah, I'm sure everyone's familiar with the Augusta National, but we will cover it anyway. It is a par 72, over 7,500 yards. They added a new tee box on number two this year. And many say that it plays closer to 7,800 yards because they mow the fairways back against the grain of the tee boxes. So you don't get a lot of rollout there. And it is a bomber's paradise. Fairways are 50 plus yards wide on average. There's really no rough. You have the first cut and then you have the pine straw. And so, you know, with everyone hitting fairways, I think the field hit 74% of fairways last year. And when everyone's hitting fairways, it's good to be long, especially since, you know, the holes are all pretty long. It's definitely advantageous on the par fives as well. The greens, pretty average in size, 6,500 square feet. They feature bank grass, lightning fast, probably the fastest that you're going to see on the PGA Tour all year. They're kind of difficult to hit, especially to get close to the pin, just because of the contours on the greens, the runoff areas around the greens. So you're going to have a tidy short game, going to have to be good with your irons, can't really have any weaknesses. I think if there's one stat that I'm not looking at as much as the other, it's going to be putting. So I'd rather have a guy that's good tee to green than a good putter. And yeah, course history matters. I mean, more than any other course on the PGA Tour. So yeah, that's kind of what I'm looking at. What are you guys doing?
Yeah, go ahead, Ryan.
Yeah, I think you make a great point where it does matter in course history. I think we always, you guys probably will agree to an extent. I think often like we'll default to course fit, right? Whether like the type of golfer that fits on that style of course, and obviously the form that they're coming in with. And most weeks, I think those trump any course history pretty comfortably. This more than any other week, I would say course history probably gets closer to a level playing field, at least in terms of comparison to those. Obviously, I'd still would rather have, you know, course fit and form, but it does become something where it's just kind of unique in terms of how it plays. Back in the day when you would have yardage books or, you know, greens books, those were a very huge advantage. But there was never something that they would have here. So this is just a place where you would have to have kind of the reps, the tournament reps to come out here and play. So that's why we haven't seen, you know, we've had a couple of debutants get into the top five. Spieth did it. We had a couple of Sungjae did it in the COVID 2020 year, but we haven't had a winner since 79 with Fuzzy Zeller. So you typically want to have some reps here under your belt before coming to navigate this place. And we've seen guys pop out of nowhere. You think of the LIV guys last year who came in with really no form. Patrick Reed hadn't been doing anything on the LIV tour, finishes top four. Phil hadn't been sniffing the top 20 on LIV, backdoors at T2 here. Charles Schwartzel a couple of years ago, doing nothing, no form, top 10. So you just kind of see it more here than anywhere else where guys have either won a jacket or just kind of contend year in, year out, just sort of find their way into the mix, into the top 30, top 20 here as the weekend goes on.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting when you consider the, you know, the LIV guys. And I know that's, you know, the last year or two in some of the majors, we haven't seen a whole lot of ownership on those guys. We can certainly delve into that here during the show. But some interesting dynamics there as far as valuing course history, you know, what we do with the LIV guys. I think it's going to be interesting to see where ownership ends up falling on those guys this week as well. So, all right, let's go ahead and start breaking down the top tier. Obviously, we know what Scottie Scheffler's been doing. T2, his last three starts. Whenever he putts it well, he's basically been unbeatable. We do have John Rahm and Brooks Koepka back in the mix this week. And then, of course, Rory McIlroy and Wyndham Clark, your other PGA Tour regulars that kind of make up the 10K range on DraftKings this week. And certainly there's enough value to where you can fit in a top guy here. We know the pricing is a little bit softer for the majors. And so, Ryan, I'll throw this top group here to you first. How do we handle Scheffler this week? I mean, he's like, you know, 4-1 odds at a major is something we haven't seen in a long time. And probably, you know, 30 to 40% ownership in DFS. What are we doing with Scheffler and the other kind of top 10K guys this week?
Yeah, I'll toss it back to you. I'd love to get your guys' thoughts because I feel like Scottie is obviously, I mean, it's a fantastic play. You know what you're getting into. I think it becomes a matter of who's your second guy in with Scottie, because I think that that starts to like eat up a ton of ownership. But it's a tough ownership week anyway because we're probably dealing with a weather wave that we don't know of and what that like has an impact in terms of some of the rain and wind that we have coming in on Thursday. But again, just knowing that 30, 40% as we climb up, depending on your contest that you're in for Scottie. And it is great chalk. Last year didn't play particularly well, struggled with the putters. Is kind of where things started to kind of turn for Scottie. It's still top 10. I think he's got like, he's finished outside the top 20 twice in his last like 31 starts or something. Great. Just he's automatic. It'd be absolutely insane to me if he's not somewhere in contention and obviously could fill it up with the birdies, and that's what we need here, is going to eat up with the par fives, and that's where most of the hay is made here. So just as a matter of, you know, are you going to come in with Scottie Xander? Because that's a really tough start with not only how you're allocating salary moving forward, but what you're doing from an ownership standpoint, eating some probably some pretty good chalk, but that's obviously not the game that we're playing, right? We're not building a betting card. We're having to build a DFS lineup. So he's obviously a play for me, but I mean, I have to be really cognizant of what's going on with the next guy in terms of ownership.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's a great point. And, you know, navigating your lineup, your total lineup ownership in Scheffler builds is certainly something that we've had to do over the last couple of months. We'll need to be cognizant of that again this week. In which case, you know, if he's 30 to 40% owned, it's tough for me to get to that level of ownership. If I'm building, you know, 100 lineups, I'll get sucked back into Rory again because, of course, he gained like 8 strokes on approach last week. In theory, his game is a really good fit for Augusta. Obviously, he's had some terrible performances here. He's had a couple times where he's been close. So, you know, the $1,200, $1,300 savings you get from Scheffler down to Rory, I think that'll be enough to sucker me in on some lineups. But Noto, what are you doing with the top group?
Yeah, give me Scheffler. I've been on Scheffler for a while. I mean, everyone has. But at this point, it's hard to envision him not being in the mix on Sunday. I think to Ryan's point, it's more about who you pair him with than if you play him or not. And I kind of like dipping into the eights. There's some lower-owned guys that I think have some upside as kind of the second guy into your lineup. If you do start with Scottie Xander, yeah, you're going to be – you're going to be kind of hitting the bottom of the barrel, and then most people probably go to Taylor Moore, which is going to be very popular, you know, three-man start, which I don't love for large field stuff. But, yeah, Ryan mentioned Scottie's numbers. I was looking at it today. So he's finished T12 or better in 30 of his last 34 starts, which is just incredible. His top five odds this week are basically plus 100, so they're giving him, you know, 50-50 shot of him finishing top five. And I just plan to be overweight in all formats, even MME. I think it's pretty easy for me to get overweight. You know, Rory's been saying all the right things in his interviews, that he's got to be patient. You know, he's been texting Butch Harmon a bunch during the week, all this stuff. But, I mean, he's just got so many demons around this place. I think he can contend. I think he can be in the mix at some point. But on Sunday, if he's going up against Scheffler, I just don't trust it. Rahm's got the back-to-back narrative, you know, going against him. Nobody's won back-to-back Masters since Tiger. He also doesn't seem too happy with LIV right now based on some of his comments recently. He hasn't won so far on LIV. He has finished T8 or better in all five of his appearances. But yeah, I don't know. It's just hard. It's a different, you know, mindset coming in without having his usual routine, the tournaments he usually plays, all that stuff. And I don't love Wyndham Clark being a first timer at 10K. I think he can play well here. I think his game certainly sets up well for Augusta, but that's a lot to pay for me for Wyndham Clark. And then Brooks is kind of tough too. T45 last week out of 54 guys at Doral. He typically plays really well the week before he wins a major. So that worries me. So for me, it's just Scheffler.
Easy enough to just take the Scheffler route and you know, take your guaranteed top four with a winning upside and just worry about the rest of your lineup. It's a different dynamic than what we've had for the better part of the last, you know, 8-9 years with one guy kind of so dominant at the top. I'm with you on sharing a little bit of concern with Koepka about the performance last week on LIV on a course where, you know, in theory he should play well. Obviously, you know, some people say just take that with a grain of salt. It's a random 54-hole LIV event the week before a major, but to each their own on that. And I think, you know, one of my favorite plays for the week, if you want to take a LIV guy, just go right down to 9,600 and take Neiman, who he won an event in Australia right before the end of the year. He's won two events this year on LIV, fourth and ninth in a couple of starts the last month. And, you know, this is a guy that was starting to become one of the best golfer, the top echelon golfers on the PGA Tour before he moved over. And, you know, now obviously people are going to say 9,600 for Neiman. That's crazy. And you know, he's going to be kind of lower owned than a lot of those other guys up at 10K. So if you're looking for a LIV pivot in the upper range, for me, I like Neiman. And then we start to go down into the 9K range. And Ryan, any other thoughts on that top group? Otherwise,
I'll buzz through a couple just to keep it moving. The Rahm thing's really interesting. You hear he said like I haven't played in a golf tournament yet this year. Like he is. It's wild. Like, I feel like he has some like regrets building here. And I think we could see some hot Rahm that we used to get back in the day. Cause I think he's coming in feeling like, hey, I'm the defending champ. This other dude is like a third of my odds and everyone's crowning him. And like, I made this choice to go and take the bag, but like, don't forget about me. And I think if it doesn't go really well, I think we start to see a little bit of heated Rahm, which I think will be maybe better entertainment, but it's definitely an interesting dynamic this week too. Brooks has got that narrative of like, I can go switch the light and just kind of show up and do it. And yes and no. Last year, he won the LIV event going in to the Masters. And it's just kind of been out of form. The irons were really bad, as you mentioned. There's also about putter change here. So there's just a little bit that makes me nervous. Now, he's terrifying. He's a terrifying fade because he obviously can go ahead and do it. But if you're looking, like there are reasons to not go down the road with Brooks. The other two guys we didn't touch on just below that tier is Victor Hovland and Patrick Cantlay, which are very interesting to me this week because, and you can see the projected ownership that you guys have kind of reflects that. They're both sort of broken. We haven't seen either of them since the Players, which is weird. They kind of both skipped the Texas swing. Most guys would go and play match play. We didn't have it this year. So they didn't add Houston. They didn't go to Valspar or Valero. So we haven't really seen them. And everyone thinks of Hovland being broken, the short game's not really dialed in, but Cantlay's lost strokes on approach this season. 2024, he is like negative 0.2 strokes on approach for the year, has not putted well here. He's to me not interesting, but like Hovland, like he's a consensus top three golfer in the world last fall. Like you could argue top two, maybe top one with what happened to BMW in the Tour Championship. So again, he's obviously been in the lab. We'll wait and see what happens here, but you know, 7%, kind of interesting to me in terms of like where we are. An interesting like second build in for some of your Scotty teams, which I think still has some pretty massive win equity that we would have been like drooling over in January.
Yeah, with Hovland, the chipping, the always, you never know when the chipping is going to become a major problem.
Yeah,
always worries me with him on this course. But if he can dial it in and, you know, and hit most of the greens and hit them close, then that doesn't become a problem. But I don't love this range a whole lot this week. I mean, Spieth is always overowned at the Masters. And then you take his comments about his wrist. Maybe that, you know, ends up suppressing the ownership a little bit. But I also don't really want to play an injured Jordan Spieth because I never usually play a regular full strength Jordan Spieth. You know, Zalatoris, probably fine, but the putter with him, you just don't know. Aubert's a first timer here. So yeah, outside of Neiman, who already talked about at 9,600, it's tough for me to love a whole lot in the 9Ks, which Noto, I presume, is part of what went to your statement that you like starting with Scotty and potentially going to the 8Ks after that.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Xander, excellent play. You know, we just don't trust him on Sunday. I got my heart, you know, ripped out again at the Players, having the lead there with like five holes left, and then just couldn't get the job done. But I mean, he's been great in majors. He's got three top tens here, so I do like Xander. I like the Neiman call. I was looking at the Live site today, which is terrible, by the way. But he's top four in greens and regulation, driving distance, birdie or better rate. So I do like him. He's got progressively better finishes at the Masters each of the last 3 years. And then I do like the lower 9Ks. I mean, I can't think of a better course for Ludwig Aubert, just a guy that absolutely bombs it off the tee. I know the first-timer narrative and all that, but I think if there's anybody that can, you know, come out and contend, it's going to be him. He's been so good for a year now. And that price point is certainly reasonable at 9,100. So I like him. Zalatoris to majors is always interesting. I think that, you know, the fact that he's missed a couple cuts recently is going to help keep that ownership down. If he hadn't played the last two and was coming off of a second and a fourth, he would be extremely highly owned. So I'll play some Zalatoris. And then what are you guys doing with Chalky Hideki? Because I think a lot of people will start Scheffler Hideki, at least like for cash games.
And I'm okay with Hideki as well. Obviously, that every time it seems like he becomes chalky, an injury note or something comes up, and then he still finishes top 10 anyway. So, and the last 4 weeks, 12th or better every time. So I don't have a strong opinion in GPPs. If you think he's too chalky and you want to pivot, I think that's fine. In cash games, you know, I think he would be a logical pairing there at the top if you find that you need somebody in that range. Ryan, your thoughts on Hideki, and otherwise we can kind of keep rolling down the middle tier here.
Yeah, I mean, love the form, love the profile. Obviously, he's a winner here, short games elites. He's at a distance. Distance is up over where he was even a couple years ago when he won. So it makes me, even though we still do get those question marks, I do feel like he's healthy. There's definitely something there. So, yeah, I mean, I get the ownership. Now we're back in the cumulative ownership discussion, right? It just matters, is this a... You know, you can't go Scotty, Xander, Hideki. First of all, you're probably dying on salary, but also you're already probably pushing 100% ownership there. So great plays in viable and cash for sure. Good bets, but from a DFS standpoint, you got to be really careful. So Hideki, if you were trying to go, you know, maybe Rom or Rory, Hideki being second guy in probably makes a ton of sense. But yeah, cash games for sure. He's a great play.
All right. What else are you looking at in this range? And as we kind of go down into the 8,000s.
I mean, I like Zalatoris. You know, I like 11% ownership too. If that ends up, you know, we're early in the week still, but that range would be, I think, pretty palatable for me. Decent putting. And I think the lag putting was never really a problem. It was anytime the poor kid got zoomed in on within 5 feet and we just saw the shakes on the takeaway. Just not fair. But even historically, again, only 8 rounds at Augusta, but he's second in this field in strokes gained putting over the last 5 years, averaged 1.3 strokes per round on these greens. I do think the broomstick has helped him a little bit. It was a little bit more solid. Obviously, he's been in contention. He would have won Riv if Hideki didn't hunt him down. You know, played pretty good golf at Arnold Palmer, where, you know, Wyndham and Scotty went kind of nuts there too. So yeah, he's obviously got the narrative of being a big game hunter. He hasn't closed the deal. Has been really, really close. But again, just another guy that I would be very surprised if he's not in the mix here.
Yeah, don't mind that call as well. And I think this, you know, this range is, you start to get a few more interesting guys. You can take the live route if you want with Smith, though his odds have kind of been plummeting a little bit. Dustin Johnson in here, obviously a past winner at 8,800. You know, you get down into the middle part of the range. Finau, you got a bomber in Young. Noto, what do you like in the 8Ks here?
Yeah, love Tony Finau, love Cam Young. You know, both bombers, both very good long mid-iron players. Finau underrated around the greens. Cam Young, not good around the greens, but for whatever reason, he shows up at majors and he just, you know, fixes his short game issues. He already has 4 top 10s in majors in his career. So those two are my favorites. Doesn't look like they're going to be too popular. And then some lower owned guys. I mean, Morikawa, I know his irons have been pretty bad recently, but he has played well here in the past, top 20s in three straight years. And do you guys remember last year, Dan Bach posted that video of Morikawa's ball moving on the green? And yes. Everyone just went after Dan for that one, poor guy. But yeah, I like JT too at 8,700. So, you know, I was just looking at the rabbit hole on Betsports. He's still eighth in tee to green over the last 24 rounds. It's just the putter, man. He had a couple of really bad rounds with the putter, and now nobody wants to play him. You've got him at 6% ownership. He's been good at the Masters before. He's won the PGA Championship twice. I'll gladly be overweight on JT.
So Noto was referencing one of the tools there over at Betsports. So Ryan, I know you're the one of the masterminds here. If you want to show off what he's talking about, feel free to do that or at any point here during the show. But otherwise, you can talk about what else you're kind of liking in this this tier here.
Yeah, if folks haven't seen it, I think it can be somewhat overwhelming because there is any type of data that you could possibly imagine and any type of condition to filter it by. That you could possibly think of. And I think it's just going to help you, I think, build a better story in terms of building better betting cards, building DFS player pools. And I think it's a very useful tool to kind of, you know, either confirmation bias on guys that you like or some guys that you want to really cross off your list too, which I think is important to do because it's really, especially in this field, right? You have to make some really tough decisions. One of the things that I love that we have here is the floor ceiling view I want to show because I think it's probably relevant for DFS more than anything else, because we always hear about spike putting weeks. So, you know, Finau is a great example. Scotty, maybe before he fixed the putting, is like, yeah, tee to green, Finau is absolutely dialed in, but we just get one of those spike putting weeks. Now we're cooking with gas. Well, how often does that actually happen? And what do those spike putting weeks look like when they do happen? So you can look through any of the strokes gained metrics here at the top and filter out based off of any filter you want to put, you know, like lightning fast bent grass greens. You want to look at strokes gained tee to green on long courses with difficult scoring conditions and see who's gaining strokes ball striking doing that, which I think is really relevant this week. You can go ahead and do that. And I look at, this is a Scotty thing that I think is absolutely wild to show you guys here. Do a real quick, just to show you last 12 months, how Scotty has really started to separate. You look at this field here. Oh, I have Augusta on, so I'll reset that. When you look at tee to green last 12 months, Scotty is gaining strokes just an insane almost 94.5% of times he is even to the field. Now, when you look at the rest of his peers, you know, Brooks has got a small sample, but even if you were to make his peers, you know, John Rahm and Rory McIlroy, you know, they're not even close. They're down here in 75% territory. Rahm, 73%, 50% he's gaining a stroke. Scotty is almost 90% gaining a stroke. When you look at gaining two strokes tee to green, you know, Scotty's doing that more frequently than like almost by 10% of how often Rory is gaining one stroke. So like even the guys that you would consider a big three with Scotty, he is absolutely separating. So when you get into this decision where you're having to, you know, eat the chalk and make a yes, no decision on Scotty, like there's a reason he's there. These are the reason that like Noda's going to be overweight and you just go all in and figure the rest out. It's because he's just kind of separated. So putting is also obviously very useful because we hear about it all the time. Like how often is someone actually spiking in these? And you can obviously put any filter, like I said. So one of the many, many useful tools that I'm sure you guys have been sharing here weekly.
All right. That's good stuff. And kudos to you guys for putting that together. It's a super useful tool and becomes more useful every time you use it because you learn the ins and outs of it a little bit, and it's super handy to have. So thanks for showing that off for a second. Anything else you want to go through kind of on this this range of $8,000 ish players?
I'm with Noto on Finau and Young. I think they are great cases. Again, like Finau is just the putting is going to figure it out. Tee to green, he's been awesome. Distance is up. Apex is up. I think that's really important here too. It's kind of why I Neiman is kind of interesting to me. Kind of that lower ball flight and trajectory. You know, you really have to have the ability to hold these greens, especially in the weekend when this maybe gets baked out a little bit because it's going to play so firm and fast. And, you know, Neiman's got that low stinger. Sometimes it's a little bit harder for him to hold these greens. And it's, I think, led to some fading, you know, results here over the years where he's, you know, kind of popped early and hasn't been able to hold on. Down a little bit below, Sam Burns and Matthew Fitzpatrick are interesting to me. Fitz, obviously, a little bit more attention here based on the ownership. Burns, he's interesting. Like Burns is kind of like Homa in a way. He doesn't really get the heat that Homa does because Burns really has never done anything in a major either. But Burns has always been a guy that can hit it a mile. He's added some distance this year. The irons are actually back to like the 2022 range. He just has also not sealed the deal in the couple times he's been in contention. So Sam Burns, 5% or so, pretty interesting to me in this range comparatively to some other guys that I think are maybe not as much win equity even that are getting significantly more ownership. So Burns and Fitz in this area are nice to me down at the low eights.
Yeah, I'll buy the Fitzpatrick narrative. Finally, I told Noto I needed to see another week, but the 4 grams out of the driver, that's he's been much better ever since. So apparently that did make a difference. And I think you can go with some of the live guys here. Again, I don't think Bryson's the craziest play in a top-heavy GPP. He does have quite a few consecutive top 10s on live, and of course, Augusta's a par, 67 for him. So he starts with a 5-shot advantage over the field. It's, how can you ignore that? So all kidding aside, I think he's okay for tournaments or as, kind of a longer shot outright bet. We usually don't see a whole lot of like 200-to-1 winners here like we've seen on the PGA Tour a lot this season, but maybe this will be the year that happens considering the way things have gone. But if you're looking for a longer shot bet, he's obviously not a safe floor play, but the ceiling, I think, is at least somewhat intriguing. So, Noto, what else you got around 8,000 here, or you can start dipping into the sevens if you like.
Yeah, I was a little crazy. I was going to bring up Bryson, too. He's been pretty terrible here throughout his career. I always thought it was kind of the Greensbook, so you couldn't have them here. He's a big Greensbooks guy, but, I don't know. I just feel good about him. Nothing else to say about it, really. Outside of that, I'll play some DJ. He picked up a win on LIV earlier. Obviously, has a green jacket. It was in November, but still a pretty good course fit. One question in the chat, the top 8K pick. If you could only have one, I will go with Cam Young.
Yeah, that's I'm gonna go with Morikawa. But your mileage may vary. Ryan, who you got?
I to differentiate because I probably would do Cam Young. I will go with Tony Finau. I think is also just right in the mix.
All right, so let's go ahead and dip down a little bit further here into the 7Ks. Noto, I'll throw this range to you first because there's a lot of your boys in here. Your old boy Harmon is in here. Jason Day is in here. Tigala, who I think you've got to take on this week, is in here. Fleetwood is in here. I mean, this is basically a lineup full of Noto's top golfers here over the last couple of years. So who do you like the best this week?
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't like any of my usuals. Maybe a little Jason Day, but Harmon, I don't think it's a great course fit for him. I like Tigala quite a bit. He's going to be popular. I had to double check my model when I first ran it. He's number 8 overall in the model. He's always been a short game guy, and all of a sudden he's ball striking. He's gained in 9 of his last 11. He's gained over 7 strokes ball striking in 2 of his last 5. He was top 10 here last year. And these wide fairways just really going to help him out. If the irons are just decent, I think he's going to have an excellent week. I'm on board with Fitz. And then I don't love anyone until we get to maybe the mid sevens. I like Corey Connors. Anytime you get him at Augusta National, had another good week with the irons. He's gained over 22 strokes on approach in his last 5 starts alone. So the irons are dialed in. He was extremely popular here last year, missed the cut. Prior to that, had 3 straight top 10s. I'll always play Patrick Reed just because people, hate clicking his name, and he always shows up for the majors. And Tommy Fleetwood, we talked about his ugly iron play. Finally got it going last week, so I'm back on Tommy as well. Looks like I'm just on all the popular plays here, so hopefully you guys have some more contrarian plays.
I think the ownership will end up spreading out a little bit, because Connors, like you mentioned, was the value du jour last year because of, it seems like every year at the Masters, like Connors just gets plastered with the 7K price tag. and the three top tens in a row, of course, before last year's miscut. Enough people will see last year's miscut, I think, to where he won't be as extreme in terms of the ownership as he was a year ago. He's definitely my favorite in here. Ryan, who do you kind of looking at in this range?
Yeah, it's kind of bummed, but I get why the Theogala steam has come along. Bet him a couple weeks ago at 60, and I thought that would 65, and I thought that'd be a great number. And he's been pounded in the betting markets, and seeing north of 20% makes a ton of sense. He just obviously the pedigree is here, just one of the best college golfers coming out of Pepperdine a few years ago, and it's all there. He just hasn't really put it together. The short game, as you know, Nono mentioned, is fantastic. He has all that on and around the greens. Obviously, it matters a ton here. Can hit it a mile. He just seems to be short in one aspect every week. Until this year, we're getting a little bit more consistent ball striking and approach game from him. And, obviously four rounds doesn't tell you a huge story, but played here last year, so not his first rodeo, and finished T9, and he scrambled his face off like he typically does. So, he just is a guy that I want to continue to buy on and buy in the pedigree. And you can just have to be really, really safe with, is Decky involved? Is Xander involved? Is Scotty involved? Versus, when you start to layer in Theogala in the lineup. The rest of this tier, outside of Fitz, as I mentioned earlier, is just kind of a big kind of stay away for me. Jason Day, I want to like. The more I look into the rabbit hole, it's pretty rough. He's like out of the guys that qualify, because you're not getting the live guys and some of the amateurs. It's like a field of 66 guys that have played, I think, more than 16 rounds in 2024. Out of those 66, Day is, I think, 65th in strokes gained approach. He's only been strokes gained positive on approach in 34% of his rounds so far this year. So I know he's been spending some time trying to work on it. But for me, it's not there this week. So it's kind of a weird stay away range. I kind of want to dip down to the lower guys, or, spend more time in the eights.
All right. So kind of as we go down a little bit further into this range, Noto got through mentioning Patrick Reed. Minwoo Lee is in the field. He's got a little tag. If you look on DraftKings, had a freak accident and broke his index finger with a dumbbell a few weeks back. So he's still in the field as of now. Obviously, Akshay with the dislocated shoulder last week. So he got some Q tags in the lower part of this 7K range. Noto, you mentioned maybe liking a few guys down here. So who are you looking at?
Yeah, I'll go with Siwoo Kim, 7,100. He's the guy that tee to green's been very good this year. He's gained at least 5.7 strokes. Tee to green is six of his last seven. He's been pretty good at the Masters too. Other than that year, I think he was like tied for the lead and broke his putter and then had to putt with his three wood. I don't know why he picked the three wood. It seems like that would mess up your putting stroke a little bit, but he's been good. I like him. Adam Scott, his numbers have been all over the place. One week it's the irons, one week it's the putter, but hey, he has a green jacket, plenty of major experience. I think he's a pretty safe bet to make the cut. And then Mr. Gerg in the chat says Jaeger's going to win. So if he's going to win, I guess I'll have a little bit of him as well.
Welcome back, Mr. Gerg. We missed you. All right. Jaeger at 7,100, the way he's playing, obviously doesn't have the Masters experience as some of these other guys, but he's been, back on the wagon there after the Florida swing. He's been playing some good golf outside of that little stretch in Florida for the better part of about 8 months now. So kudos to him. Obviously, if you're looking for experience, Scott, Henley, those are the guys that that maybe you want to look to for a little bit of safety. So, Ryan, anything else above kind of 7K that that you have some interest in this week?
I do like Patrick Reed, as was mentioned earlier. Couldn't see him on the screen, so I kind of skipped him. But no one wants to click Patrick Reed because no one wants to cheer for Patrick Reed, right? He's not the allegedly, I know they like to throw lawsuits around. So I'm sure he's a lovely person in real life, but not a person that everyone wants to click or get behind. He's been even if you look back to, 5-6 years ago when he was on tour regularly, he's a form guy. He's typically will piece together strong events. And, obviously it's hard with Liv because they don't play often. But last week, really nice showing at Doral. Of course, demands long irons and playing long like that. And like, he won at Torrey Pines. He's obviously won here before. So that kind of suits his game. The week before that, or the event before that, he finished T4 in an Asian Tour event in Macau. So like, he's bringing in a couple of top 10s. Obviously, you know, not a lot of form. And this is a big year for him in terms of Augusta. He'll continue to play, but his like owner, his ability to play in the other majors falls off this year. So he needs to get himself in and his best chance to continue on in majors, unless there's some sort of merger, is going to have him, you know, local kid, have him have a really strong finish here at Augusta. So yeah, I like the fit. I like the form, and I like his motivation coming in here quite a bit as well. Akshay is interesting. Hopefully the shoulder's okay. I know he's a debutant, but as another guy, like he's played 10 times this year. He missed four cuts. The other six times he's been inside the top 17. Ball striking is tremendous. And really just his fit for the course is pretty awesome too. Like just the big, that ball flight, that sweeping left-handed ball flight. We've seen lefties perform well here historically. Now, again, he probably has to not miss a ton of greens because the short game is not great. But again, like just his 7,200, if he's going to be that low ownership wise, I think people maybe thought he was going to come in, you know, maybe in the sixes. So we're getting maybe a little bit of an overprice for him, but I don't know. I feel fine riding some form if he's sub 5%.
Yeah, I think people will be nervous. You know, anybody with that injury tags, people tend to get nervous about, myself included. So certainly worth noting as well. Yep. All right, Ryan, I'll let you take the first pass here as we kind of get down to the value range, punting in the 6Ks if we're going down there. And if you're starting with Scheffler, you probably need at least one guy. We don't have the, you know, 5K bliss to look at on DraftKings this week, but anybody that's standing out to you in the 6Ks?
One of the, just at 7 flat, I think Harris English is very interesting. Didn't play very well in San Antonio, but had been coming in with some pretty good form and actually has had some decent finishes here in the past. Has at least been competitive. And we've seen T21 or better in 4 or 6 of the last 8 starts. Pretty good. And is also up from a driving distance standpoint. So it's more so, again, another guy that can scramble really well. So if the irons are good, he'll probably be in the mix. And maybe we get a little depressed ownership because he played so poorly in San Antonio and missed the cut there. So a couple of guys that are really interesting to me. I like Adam Hadwin quite a bit, and I think a guy he's not going to be really owned at all. It's not a guy that people like to click. He's not very sexy, but just I like how he's been playing this year. This is 4th time here. Not great course history in the past, but again, I like how he's playing. Around the green has been great. Again, he's up from a strokes gained ball striking standpoint. He's added distance again. And again, back to some of his prime years. And even then, he wasn't a great distance guy. But I think it's been a concerted effort to kind of continue to compete. And I think we've seen him have some good results. I think he's just not a guy who's going to win this golf tournament. But you're looking at like mid-sixes. I think he's pretty interesting. Nicolai Højgaard feels like a guy that is going to win or compete in many majors moving forward. He's still 23, playing the Ryder Cup team. It's been very streaky. The putter's been poor. Ball striking has been great. So he's kind of a team no putt guy. You put him in the lineup with, you know, Finau and Cam Young and see if just, you know, these guys can kind of piece it together here. And again, a debutant. So people are probably a little nervous clicking his name too. So I like him quite a bit. And another guy who kind of fits that build is EVR. EVR's ball striking stuff has been, I mean, this is a poor man's, I would say poor man's Hovland, because it's just chipping. If EVR finds the green, it's been pretty good and has had some really nice finishes here in the swing season. And then in 2024, he's just, man, if he has to chip, it is pretty rough. So the rest of it's pretty good. And again, 6,600, you're going to need a couple of these guys, especially if you're starting with, you know, a couple of the big dogs at the top.
And EVR is in the first group off the tee at 8 o'clock on Thursday. Of course, weather permitting, Thursday's weather looks a little rough right now. We'll have to keep an eye on that. But if it ends up being an advantage to the first guys off the tee, he is in that first group. And then the second group actually features Taylor Moore, who is going to be one of the probably more popular plays down here. My pick is for JT Poston, even though he's kind of known as a short game guy. I mean, that has plenty of value here. He made the cut here last year, and I was actually filtering some of the stuff on the rabbit hole tool earlier, and over, I think it was 36 round filter, he's like 5th in par 5 birdie or better percentage, which certainly doesn't hurt on this course as well. So I kind of like Poston. We got him at about 4% ownership at 6,800. As a pivot away from some of the more popular names down here, agree with some of those guys that Ryan just mentioned as well. Noto, what do you got for punt values this week?
Yeah, don't love the sixes. I mean, I know it's enticing because a large percentage of the field is going to make the cut to start with two stars and then kind of go to the 6Ks, but I don't feel great about any of them, like finishing top 10. But I like Benny on a little bit, a bomber scrambler. He's missed back-to-back cuts, so I think that's going to help keep the ownership down. I like Lucas Glover a little. He's known as a ball striker, but he's gained around the green in 9 of his last 11. And then Taylor Moore, I mean, he feels like the easy click. I don't know what to do. I mean, I generally try to stay away from cheap chalk. But
see, you've always said avoid the cheap chalk.
But cheap chalk of the Masters. I mean, going back to the Hoffman and Kevin Na days, I mean, it just always seems to hit. So
Connors didn't hit last year.
It's true. But he was more in the sevens, you know.
I know. What do we have? What's his – I've got too many things going on right now to see. We got ownership, or either you guys got
Moore's. So right now, Denny's actually getting more ownership than Moore, which I'd be surprised if that happens. But Denny's a 10, Moore's a 8.
All right. Well, that's not – I mean, that's not extreme. I guess not like 20% level.
Oh, sound the alarm. Dan Kramer in the chat.
Oh, no. Well, he's back to take our money.
He's back.
We'll be doing the snake draft here shortly. And we're going to try to tune it up to a 12-man here tonight. We got three of us that can get in. There's 89 golfers. We can get 84 of them in a 12-man snake draft. So I know there's probably a lot of people itching to get in that as well. So we'll hop in there here in just a minute. Anybody else for the good of the cause? Ryan, anybody we've missed that you want to chat about? I mean, we're going to get deep into the depths of the snake draft, too.
We're going to be drafting all of them, right? Yeah. No one in particular. I think there's just some really like Henley is not necessarily 6K chalk, but Henley's probably mispriced at 7,200. Again, you just have to be really aware of how you're grouping these guys together. And Henley's a great play. You know, he fits kind of that, you know, maybe he treats these par fives as three shot holes and, you know, spins back 80 yard wedges. And, you know, that worked for him last week in San Antonio too. And he's playing really good golf. So he's a great play and makes sense that he's, you know, pretty chalky too. So yeah, I think you just have to be really aware of, you know, yeah, 6 of 6 are necessary, but you can have some pretty garbage 6 of 6s get through if you don't have guys that are competitive here. 6 of 6 is not going to be enough to get it done. I think you'll see obviously a pretty higher than normal 6 of 6 rate with this field and you know the cut line of 50 and ties and a 89 man field where we can really cross off like a solid dozen guys at least. So yeah, if you just be aware of I think cumulative ownership this week.
All right, good stuff. And of course, for those of you who aren't super familiar with us over at Roto Grinders, you can check out our YouTube channel. We put all the shows on there. If you're watching us on social media, you can check us out on YouTube. And of course, you can check out our premium content over at Roto Grinders. We've got a combo premium discount going on right now, running an exclusive discount. Get your first month of combo premium for $40 off. That means you'll get access to PGA premium for this week's Masters, of course, MMA premium for UFC 300 this weekend. We've got NBA winding down. We've got NHL playoffs coming up. We've got MLB in the mix now. So you can get all that for just $15 more than just PGA premium alone. So you can check the link in the description for more info and to check out that awesome new deal while you can. So check that out.